today I really wanted to talk. You know, God's got a funny sense of humor. The actual talk is called "Serve Like Jesus," and the reason that it's titled the way that it was on the sheet is because Christina and I are doing one together. We're talking about sort of different things, but it all kind of goes back to the same topic, which is serving others. Originally, I wanted to do a workshop on, you know, how do you get a book published if you want, or how do you get a DVD produced? And I actually had a whole presentation written on that. And I did perform it in front of a camera in the hotel room. So if you still want that one, you can find it at youtube.com/Josh Peck Disclosure. That actually is going to go live in 55 minutes. So every day I do a video on that channel. That's the one today. It's called Modern Ministry Success or something. That is important information because a lot of people, you know, will ask me, well, what, you know, I want to write a book. I have something on my heart. How do I get it out there? How do I get started? And that is important. What first inspired the original talk was I'm going to be self-publishing a book as soon as I can get it out. I tried to get it by the time of this conference, but I didn't want to throw something together. I wanted it to actually be helpful, so I'm going to take a little bit more time with it, so hopefully later this year. But I'm working on a book that's going to talk about all that. It's going to be basically a guide on how, if you want to write a book or, you know, make a CD or whatever you want to do, if you want to just, or even if you just want to successfully share Bible verses on Facebook and reach as many people as possible, that's what that book is going to be. Now, so I had that already written because I'm usually prepared before I do these things. But yesterday during the speaker's lunch, Jesus kind of dropped something else into my mind. It's related, but I think this is going to be more helpful. It's a little broader, but I think before, you know, the books and the DVDs and all that stuff, to be successful in Christian ministry means to serve others. That's the most important part of the whole thing. And unfortunately, that's what a lot of people who first get into it miss. And those people usually don't last very long because you can't. If you go into it wanting to serve yourself, even if you don't have like an egotistical attitude or anything about it, but if that's the main concern, like, well, I want to do this, you know, to make money. Even if you're thinking, well, you know, you got to provide for your family, you got to do important things. Sure. But for example, I remember when I was a kid, I thought it would be the coolest thing to be on TV. You know, I mean, what kid doesn't? Surprisingly, not a lot of people think about that. I was just weird. I thought everybody wanted that, but but for me, it was like acting or you know, doing something like that. But God really, and I didn't notice until I looked back on it, but God really rooted that out of me to where I love doing, like, I'm on TV now. I love doing it and everything, but it's not about being seen. It's not about anything with me. It's about how can I most effectively grow my audience so I can spread Jesus even further into the unbelieving world that we live in. So like I said, the first draft of the talk, it was entitled Modern Ministry Success. God changed it to what we're going to be talking about today. And it is funny because Christina, my wife, if you haven't met her, she's sitting right there. Raise your hand so they know who you are. I told her yesterday, we brought the kids with us. And I asked her, I hate to ask you to do this, but can you watch the kids and take them down to the conference with the table and all the chaos and everybody talking so I can have a couple hours in the room by myself? I've got to rewrite this whole talk. Jesus inspired something and I got to go with it. It's going to be weird. It's going to be different. And we're going to do something in this talk that really doesn't get done. And it's to prove a point. But it's all about servitude. So, if you want to be successful in Christian ministry, you do it by serving others, not convincing others to serve you. So the world defines success most commonly by the amount of money that any given venture will bring in. So, you know, if you run a bit, and there's, by the way, there's nothing really wrong with that. But in the context of ministry, while money can be an important part of it, and it should be used as a tool, it should never be the main focus. You can't make decisions on what to write about based on how much money you're going to bring in, or what to do a movie about, or something, because that just moves the Holy Spirit just out of the whole situation. Teaching an unbelieving world about Jesus Christ through love, that absolutely needs to be the main focus, and So included in that is building up your own personal relationship with Jesus, thereby learning to be loving to others. That's a big part of being in Christian ministry too. And you can't really effectively serve others until you realize that your own relationship with Jesus always needs cultivating, always takes learning. You know, it's an ongoing thing throughout life. You don't ever really get there, you know, but it's the process that's really important. So I want to start with a teaching of servitude from Jesus. I'm going to be reading from Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 28. It says, "Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him," Jesus, "with her sons. And kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, 'What do you want?' She said to him, 'Say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left in your kingdom.' Jesus answered, 'You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I am to drink?' They said to him, 'We are able.' He said to them, 'You will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father.' And when the 10 heard it, they were indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus called them to him and said, 'You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you.'" That's us. "But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So a lot of times when we think about servitude, you know, we think, yeah, you know, I would take a bullet for my friend. I would take a bullet for my child or something like that. And we kind of think of it in those terms. But that's a part of it, but most of us are never really going to have that situation or have to deal with it. I love that line, "It shall not be so among you," that Jesus said to the sons. We know, you know, based on things like in Ephesians and stuff, we know that at some point we're going to be with Christ. We're going to be seated with Christ in heaven. And I love that the brothers wanted that, but what Jesus went to was the servitude part. He didn't say, you know, well, you need to, and this, of course, is a big part of it, too. They already believed in Jesus. That's the main thing. So Jesus didn't really have to present the gospel to them. They already knew he was the Messiah. So he took it a step further and said, well, now you need to learn servitude. The gospel, that's our foundation, that's our stepping point, or stepping off point to the next level, so on and so forth. But unfortunately, we live in a world where a very loud and influential minority, and it is a minority, you guys, me, the good Christians who just want to be nice, we're the majority, but sometimes we're just kind of quiet because we don't like to get into fights and we don't like to cause problems. But a very loud and influential minority of voices in mainstream Christianity, not even fringe stuff like what this conference is, but mainstream Christianity today, that they've risen up to preach against servitude, though they don't really frame it like that. Teachings like, these are just a couple of names I made up because I didn't want to call anybody out, but you know who we're talking about. Prosperity stuff, teachings like how you can get this or that for yourself, or God wants you to make a ton of money, or clever ways to kind of flip the script and convince others to be in servitude for themselves, all while really what they're really doing is only serving the wallet of the mega church pastor in question. That's mainstream. That's what most quote-unquote Christians, that's what they get. You know, that kind of begs the question, though, is money actually wrong? You know, it's not wrong to make money. Money's a tool. You need it. But money is not the root of all evil. The love of money is. Money made in any kind of ministry, you know, whether it serves millions or whether it only serves one person, it's got to be used incredibly responsibly to further Jesus' purposes and not our own, whatever his purposes are. Now, sometimes that will be, you know, well, you got to take care of your family, or you got to pay your bills, and that's fine. But most Christians know this. I mean, this is like basic 101, and I'm sure you guys already all know this. Yet most never really get to see it in practice. And if somebody is going to be in front of people, you know, teaching something, then they need to be living it and demonstrating it too. Otherwise, the message has no foundation, and it just crumbles. And I think that's what a big part of the state that Christianity is in today. So there are some who get into Christian ministry, especially, you know, in the fringe, who think, and by the way, I'm not talking about any of the speakers here, because these are people who are trying to get into it and they don't ever make it because they got the wrong attitude about it. This isn't any of the speakers. I know probably 80% of, or maybe 90% of the speakers here, and every single one of them I would vouch for. But there are some who are up and coming, and they're wanting to try to get into Christian ministry, especially in this fringe stuff that we enjoy. But they think that they can become rich and famous through it. That could happen, but people who are going into it for that are going to be incredibly disappointed because it almost never happens. I mean, if you think about, even at this conference, in any fringe Christian, anybody who even knows the word Nephilim, who's like the most famous one? Maybe Ellie Marzulli? But if you go to any just average Christian out in the world at any church and ask if they know who he is, they're not going to know who he is. So, you know, the whole fame and money and all that, it's not going to fly. Money should be nothing more than a tool to solve a problem. You know, that's what it really is. Much in the same way that, like, medicine is used to treat a disease. But there are some who become addicted to the side effect of the medicine. They take more than they need, and they become addicted to it. And it's the same with money. We get the same type of thing. And again, this is not anybody here at this conference. This is people who, you know, I get emails sometimes, you know, hey, Josh, can you get my book to Tom Horn? Many times have I gotten that, and I usually don't reply. And it's not out of being rude or anything, but it's because, well, you know, I didn't do that when I first started, and I'm going to be writing about that in this upcoming book. But that's not what I did. I followed Jesus to the best of my ability, and I served others to the best of my ability. And in the beginning, that meant people had to help me first because I was just in a mess. So, I mean, I could tell you how to write books, make DVDs, get published, all that stuff, get on TV and radio, all the rest. And again, that was the original message. But all of that knowledge won't do anybody here any good if you don't know the importance of servitude. I mean, that is foundational. So we don't write books, you know, I'm an author, I do other things too, but that's kind of where I started. We don't write books to elevate ourselves, or at least we shouldn't, but we do it in order to serve you. That's got to be the attitude. And in the same in your own lives, you have opportunities that you can serve others, and I'm going to prove it in a few minutes here. But this is also why we sell products, but we don't ever sell information. We give information away freely. I'm going to explain what I mean by that because, you know, anybody could say, well, Josh, I went to your table and you got a ton of information for sale there. Here's what I mean. Any one of you could ask me about anything that's in those books, and I'll just tell you what it is. You know, there's never going to be a reality anywhere where me or any of the other speakers down there, and if any of them did, then they don't deserve to be here because this conference is amazing. But there's no way that any one of them, if you ask a question, they're going to say, well, that's going to cost you $20. Here's a book, and, you know, pay for it, and then we'll talk. No one's going to do that, you know. Most Christians aren't going to do that. Yet, of course, we do get blamed for stuff like that. So that's the other thing. If you're going to get into Christian ministry, you're going to be accused of only doing it for the money. But that's not the case. I'm sure, like we talked about before, there's a couple of, you know, mega church pastors that are in for it, you know, into it for that. But that shouldn't be the idea. So we sell products. You know, we'll sell a book or a DVD, but we give information away for free. That's why we do interviews and why we, you know, do radio shows or go on TV or we do these conferences and just to talk to you guys. Or most, I think pretty much everybody, we give out our email addresses and even Facebook Messenger, sometimes even phone numbers. So there are mega church pastors that won't do that. Now, this isn't just here's everything we're doing right, and you know, but it's just to say that the only reason that this works and why this conference is so special, and it's only because, at least as far as I know, I don't know everybody's heart, but at least as far as I know, everybody has that idea of servitude down. So how do we help others? Now, if you have a message, and you do, we all have the Great Commission, right? We all have that message. We all have the message of Jesus. I absolutely encourage everybody to share it in any way you can, but only if it's shared to serve others and not yourself. Again, basic Christian 101, and I'm sure you guys already know this, but I think a lot of times we might not fully realize, you know, what that means, because you'll notice immediately, almost immediately, but you'll notice a flesh against the spirit situation and how you construct your message, even if it's just a Facebook post or something. Now, if the flesh is leading you, then your message, it's just going to suffer ultimately, because you'll be crafting it for the wrong purposes. This is a lot of the what's behind these Facebook wars, you know, or YouTube comment wars, where people just, you know, go back and forth at each other. But if the Spirit is leading you, while the message may not be as popular, you might even get more flack for it or more trolling for it. If the Spirit's leading you, it is something that Jesus can work with, and while others and others will be blessed by it in ways that you may never know. What are the first steps to take? First, you start off small and pay very close attention to those who lift you up and help you to serve others. These people, and if you start something online, if you start a podcast or a show, or even if you just get online and start talking about how awesome Jesus is and you want to share some Bible verses, you're gonna get a few people following you that actually want to help. These people absolutely will be your core foundation probably forever, meaning they will help you when you need it, and they will also correct you if you need it. And never forget them. You need to be open to reproof and open to advice. And at the same time, you yourself must be open to reprove and advise others out there, you know, if you see something. But it's got to be out of love and genuine servitude towards them. So, but yeah, that core foundation is incredibly important. Actually, I'm going to embarrass you guys. I got a couple of people here, Ann and Kevin. Excuse me. Back before I really knew that Jesus was calling me to write, I didn't know really what I was called to do, but I knew I wasn't called to do what I was doing. I was staying at home, collecting disability, and hopelessly addicted to painkillers because I have a chronic bone disease. And there came a time where I really needed some help, and I needed financial help. I had started doing a couple of blogs. I got a small following. This was before anything major happened. And I got some of the best encouragement from those two people right there, Kevin and Ann. And through their prayers and encouragement, they and people like them, people like Sam back there, I've only known him a year, but I would absolutely include him in this too. Those are your core foundation people that you're going to need, because even when you're in it, even when you have books out there and you get products and you get to speak at conferences, there's going to be tough times. There's going to be times that people, they'll just do anything they can to try to bring you down, and you're going to need those people to bring you through it. Of course, I can't forget my lovely wife. She's first and foremost, well, besides Jesus, of course, but it's only because of Jesus that type of thing can actually happen. So those types of people, don't ever forget them. That is incredibly important. So what's the easiest way to serve? And this is ironic. The easiest way to serve others in a way that is not off-putting, strangely enough, whether they believe or not, this actually works really well if they're not a believer who you're talking to, ironically, is through money. And it sounds weird, because all this time I'm talking about, you know, you got to be really careful with money, and, you know, you can't let it be advice and all this stuff. But to a person in need, something as simple as $20 can go so far. And if they're not a believer, if you give a non-believer $20 because they need something, they'll listen to what you have to say. You know, $20 can pay somebody's bill. It can provide gas for someone's car. It can even buy dinner for a night or for a week. Christina and I have been there. There was this one time, I don't know, either way it was miraculous, we were on the verge of losing everything, and we needed $20 just to survive the next week. And we were so broke and so poor. I knew where every dime, penny in the house was. We both were really vigilant about that. We were not the type of people that would just lose a $20 bill. So I was walking by our kitchen table, and I noticed something sticking out of some papers. And I moved it, and there was a $20 bill there. And I'm confident in saying that it wasn't there before, and nobody had come over. Nobody was there. I mean, whether there was some natural means or not, maybe we did just forget, but it was absolutely a God thing. $20 can go so far. And if you're freely giving $20 to serve someone else, because, you know, unfortunately our world revolves around money. It just does. I don't like it. I don't think any Christian really does. Well, some of them do, but, you know, I mean, it's unfortunately a terrible system, but that's just how it runs. But God can work all things together for good. So even taking $20 to serve somebody, again, they'll be more willing to hear what you have to say. I mean, maybe it's a non-believer, maybe it's an atheist, maybe it's somebody who's a cultural Christian and doesn't really know what the term means. Maybe it's just another Christian who needs help, and you can create some kind of bond there. But like I've said, there's been times in my life where $20 was the difference between making rent or living out of our car. Me, Christina, and our baby daughter, Jackie, at the time, she was just born. There were times where just that $20 absolutely meant the world. And or eating for a week, or even having a suit to appear on television for the first time. The first time that I was invited to speak on Skywatch TV, and the video is still up there. We didn't have anything. We didn't even know how we were going to get there. but they pay for travel and everything, but still we didn't know how she was going to be able to take the time off work, or we didn't know. And I didn't have a suit because I'd never needed one before. I'd never thought about it. I didn't have a suit, but I did have $20. And so even though there were other things that we probably could have spent that $20 on, that, you know, like bills and things. But we just kind of took a leap of faith, and we drove to Goodwill, and I bought a $20 suit. So my very first interview, which is still online, if you go and watch it on the Skywatch TV YouTube channel, that suit is a Goodwill suit for $20. So $20 can go an amazingly long way. But I remember a time where even $20, I couldn't afford it to serve anybody else. So how many people out here truly want to serve others? Come on, every hand should be going up. How many people truly want to deny themselves for a chance to serve someone else? Absolutely. How many people have felt at one time or another that they don't have a lot of chances to serve others but would like more? How many people... It's going to sound like this is going somewhere, but it's not going where you might think. I promise. I'm not going to ask you for money. How many people would give money out of their own wallet out of service to someone else if it meant that it could possibly open a conversation giving you the chance to introduce them to Jesus? Good. How many people want to serve others like that, but at times have not had the money to do so? Yeah, I've certainly been there. I need 5 volunteers. 1, 2, 3. 2 more. It can't be people I already know. 2 more. Anybody? We got 3. 4. 1 more. It's going to be worth it, I promise. There we go. First stand up. All right, come on up here. I'm kind of taking a chance doing this kind of thing. This kind of thing freaks me out, doing volunteers and just, you know, usually I just want to give a presentation. I want to get out of there. But I'm doing what my good friend Donna Howell calls doing it afraid. If you guys watch Chalk Talk, and you should because it's a great show, it's a show that we host, she kind of shared her testimony about how her getting up and talking to people and doing that stuff, it's weird to her and it freaks her out, and she does it afraid, out of faith that Jesus is going to use something out of it. So I'm doing that here. Okay, so listen. I'm still not rich, by the way, but I have 5 20s in my wallet. That's all I have. I'll even show you. 5 20s in my wallet, $100. This is my own money. This is not donation money or anything weird like that. So here, this is what we're going to do. This is not for you to keep. This is not for you to keep. You can keep it. No, that's not for you to keep. It's not for you to keep, and that's not for you to keep. But hold on to them, because you're not going to give them back to me either. What Jesus impressed on me is proving servitude to others by living it. And I am certainly not perfect, but it's just this message, the church so badly needs to hear it. So here's what I'm going to challenge the five of you to do. Take that $20, and at some point, could be tomorrow, could be in a year, don't spend it on yourself. Use it to serve somebody else. It doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter who they are. And I don't even want to know what you've done with it. Don't come back to me and say, hey, Josh, I used the 20, because you're not accountable to me on this. Josh Peck did not give you $20. Jesus Christ gave you $20. Because if it was fleshly, sinful Josh Peck, I would have kept $100 for myself, and I just wouldn't. I would have done the first presentation that I wrote. So this is Jesus. You're accountable to him. And I don't know, and I don't want to know what you're going to do with it. You could choose to keep it, but I would say that if you do, Christian ministry, you know that you would have a little ways to go before really getting involved in Christianity. But I want to really impress on you guys starting out, and as much as the church that will listen to this, I'm putting this up online, that servitude is the most important thing. And like I said, I could tell you how to write books, and I could tell you how to get published and all that, but it serves no good. The most important thing that I can teach you five, all of you, the thousands of you out there, cameras don't know. All of you out there, everybody watching on YouTube, the most important thing that I can teach you is how to serve others. And the only way you learn is just by doing it. So that's it. You can sit down. Let's give these people a hand, because they're going to do some amazing things. All right. So I know that was weird. It was a little weird for me too, but I have faith that Jesus is going to do something with that. And I'm excited by the fact that I'm not going to know until the kingdom. Like I said, I don't want to know. Do not email me later and tell me what you did with it. I want to find out. I want to find out in the kingdom. So that brings us to the last part of the talk, and then I'm going to let Christina talk for a while. Temporal versus eternal rewards. I'm going to read for you 1 Corinthians 3, 11 through 15. I actually, years ago, I went to a Christian college that I had a lot of terrible experiences with, but there was one glimmer of hope. I don't remember his name or who he was, but there was a pastor that got up, and for the first time, I actually heard a real sermon. So this is a little piece of that, but it really stuck with me, and I always thought, you know, if I ever give the chance, I don't care how big the audience is, if I ever get the chance, I want to preach that message. So 1 Corinthians 3, 11 through 15, it says, "For no one can lay a foundation other than which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stone, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become manifest. For the day will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire. And the fire will test what sort of work each one of them has done. If the work that anyone has built on the foundation survives, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved, but only as through fire." So what are we talking about? Now, whether that passage is actually meant as literal or a metaphor, I don't know, but it doesn't matter, because the teaching is still the same. So I want you to imagine this with me. Imagine after this life, you're standing in front of Jesus, and all of your deeds, both things for yourself and those for Jesus, are represented as a stack of wood, hay, straw, and you probably assume there's some jewels and gold in there too. But it's there in front of you. Jesus is in front of you. And then all of a sudden, a huge fire comes down and burns all the wood, hay, and straw, leaving behind only the things that you did for Jesus, the only things that could not be burned, your good deeds for him. You look down in surprise to see a pile of gold and jewels so small that it could fit in the palm of your hand. And that's all that was left behind. So you walk up to that pile, your deeds for Jesus throughout your entire life, and you scoop them up into your hand, and Then you approach Jesus on his throne, and you see the holes in his hands, in his feet, You see the evidence of what he did for you with his life. And you hold out your hand to Jesus and you present to him your small handful of jewels and gold, and you tell him, I love you this much. By serving others, you're serving Jesus, who came first to serve us. So be like Jesus, serve others, and you will be successful in ministry, not by how much earthly money you make. That is not the point. But by how many souls you introduce to Jesus, how much of a servant you can learn to be, and how many deeds you do for Jesus alone, resulting in the gold and jewels that you can present before him who served you first when you stand before him. If you want to lead people to Christ, you must serve people for Christ. So thank you, take care, and God bless. All right, I will let Christina speak now. And I am going to go compose myself.
Why did you do this to me?
I know.
I'm a hot mess.
That's okay. I am too. I love you.
I love you. Okay. Hi, everyone. It's
That's the play button, just so you know.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So, I am Christina Peck. Hi, I'm Josh Peck's wife. This is my first time speaking here. It's nice to see you. Our talk is going to meld well with one another, I think. Josh.
That's interesting, too, because we didn't plan. I don't know what she's talking about, and she definitely didn't know what I was going to talk about.
No, so. No, we practiced. I didn't practice in front of him. He practiced in front of me his original speech, which was good.
And it
was very good.
And it is on YouTube, people.
And it is on YouTube.
But it wasn't this.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about me, my life. I'm going to get into some details on how to be more self-sufficient self-sufficient. What does that mean? How to make your own products, chemical-free living, keeping your body, the temple, clean. That's what I'm going to be talking about. And some of our experiences are going to come into this. So a little bit about me. My name is Christina Peck. I grew up in a small town of Goodrich, Michigan, which is southeast Michigan. On a farm of 13 acres. I am the youngest of five siblings. I have three older brothers and an older sister. I was the Abraham and Sarah baby, which means my older brothers and sister are quite a bit older than I am. My oldest brother is 15 years older than I am, and the youngest of the first four is about 7 years older. And then came me. I was born to Dan and Louise Kramer. My father worked in a shop in engineering, and my mother was a nurse. And I went to school for polysomnography, which it sounds scary, but it just means sleep study. That's what I went to school for. And I was going to be starting my clinicals. Then they told me that it would be between 3 and 5 years before I'd be placed in the medical field. So I changed my major to business, because you can do anything with a business degree, right? And it was about 6 months before I graduated that I had to stop going to school, because 2 weeks before my wedding to my wonderful husband, he had to stop working because of his bone disease. And I had to find a second job. I was working at McDonald's at the time. I was just a lowly crew person. Started there as my first job when I was 15. I started when I was 15. Then I got a job at a doctor's office. It was my second job. And that's where he was seeing his homeopathic doctor. And I had to stop, or he had to stop working. And he was still trying to get on disability. And all of a sudden, we found out we were going to be having a baby. After we were married for 9 months, and then all of a sudden, I found out I was pregnant. Now, I was never supposed to have children. I was in a very bad car accident at the age of 14 that was supposed to leave me paralyzed. I was not supposed to be talking. They told me I would never have children, and if I were to conceive, I would never carry. And which I thought proved to be true. In January of 2010, I had a miscarriage and I had no idea I was pregnant. I was maybe 6 weeks pregnant. It was 3 months after we were married. And it was, uh, I I had lost the baby. And so I was both very nervous and scared when I found out that we were pregnant. And I had some scares. I started spotting at 8 weeks. And luckily, I worked right next door to an OBGYN. And they went through and they were able to do the ultrasound. And then I saw the heartbeat. And I knew everything was going to be okay. And that was Jacqueline. That was our oldest little girl. She will be 7 in a couple weeks. And during that time of being pregnant with her, I was getting so scared. A, we had no money. We were broke. We had no idea. It wasn't until I was six months pregnant with Jacqueline that he was granted disability. So that was a God thing. And I was being told all these things, what you need to have a baby. You need this type of fabric softener because baby's skin is sensitive. You need this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, I have not even $5 to put towards this stuff. What do I do? I had a very strong Christian friend who worked with me at the doctor's office. Her name is Denise. And she told me, she's like, for less than $5, you can pick up the stuff to make your own detergent that is safe for the baby, safe for you. And she's like, let me do this for you. So she went to the Kroger, the superstore that was right down the street from the doctor's office. She picked up the stuff, brought it back to me, and she wrote out the recipe. And that is what started my journey. I used to be this person who, like, just tell me what I need to go buy so I can go buy it because I am not artsy and craftsy. I turned into being an artsy and craftsy person. So I learned that if I just took a third of a bar of Fell's Naphtha soap and I grade that down and I mix it with a half a cup of borax and washing soda, and I melt that together and stir it until it dissolves and add lots of water. This is what you do. You cut a third of a bar of Fell's Naphtha soap. You grate it down. You put it in a saucepan and wait until it melts. And then you add, that's my step one, add 6 cups of water to it and heat until it's melted. Step two, add a half cup of washing soda and a half a cup of borax and stir until it's dissolved. Step three, remove from the heat and add 4 cups of hot water to your 2-gallon bucket, to a 2-gallon bucket, and add the soap mix, and be sure to pour slowly so it doesn't suds up too much. Add 1 full gallon of water plus 6 more cups and stir. And optional, if you'd like to use essential oil, you can add it. But since I was having a baby, I skipped that step, as I didn't know what was safe at the time. But certain companies like Young Living or doTERRA have baby safe essential oils. And if you would like to use it, you would go through one of them. I'm a Young Living distributor, so I might be a little biased. But the fourth and the final step, if you let it sit for 24 hours, it will gel up. You know, it kind of looks like egg noodle soup, egg drop soup. So not necessarily the most attractive, but it's cheap and it works. And all you need is a half a cup per wash. And that is how you would make it. But if that is too much, there's a dry recipe, believe it or not. You would grate that third of the bar of Fell's Naphtha soap, add the borax and the washing soda and your essential oil, and again, only half a cup. So there you go. There's that. And so when I realized that I could make my own products, I started thinking, what else can I do to save money? Because I'm broke. I'm so broke. I would work 1 job, 2 jobs, sometimes 3 jobs. And we were still paying out more money than we were bringing in. But I started researching. I can make my own bleach, laundry detergent, and even Vicks Vapor Rub. Hey everyone, today I'm going to show you how to make your own bleach. That's right, your own bleach. Homemade bleach. I did a video on this a few years back, but the audio quality was terrible. My presentation was not that good. Now that I've got some more experience, I'm going to go back and I'm going to redo some of my old videos. And hopefully you'll enjoy them a lot more. So what you need is a
container, obviously, to put your bleach in. I measured this out. This holds about 4 cups of water, but you need a cup of either hydrogen peroxide and or witch hazel. In this case, I'm going to be using witch hazel, so I'm going to add 3 cups of water and 1 cup of witch hazel. I have this, and you're going to need a funnel so you don't make a mess. I already poured my witch hazel into my cup here, so I'm going to pour that in to the bottle. The other ingredients that you are going to be using is lemon juice and optional essential oil, meaning you don't need to use it if you don't want to. Last time I did this, I used doTERRA lime and along with the lemon juice, and it was phenomenal. This time I'm going to be using peppermint. I don't have lime, unfortunately. We'll just see how this goes. There's nothing like nothing wrong with smelling lemon and peppermint. Now I'm going to add my 3 cups of water. One. In my original post, it was 15 cups of water, 1 cup of, or 3 cups of peroxide. This time around, I don't have a big bucket to put it all in. I'm just using this. And I'm actually going to do just half a cup. So I still need to add 3 tablespoons of lemon juice. So I got my lemon juice out. And this, hopefully, there we go. One. Two and three. Now in my big bucket that I did in my original post, I put 7 drops of doTERRA lime because it was a big 3-gallon bucket. This is just a little bottle. Well, not a little bottle. It's a pretty good sized bottle. Look at that. I am going to probably do 2 drops of peppermint. Now, when I did my toothpaste video, it was kind of hard to get the peppermint out. So hopefully it doesn't do it to us this time. Hopefully it's just going to come out. And I still have quite a bit in here. There we go. Okay, I got some in there. Now I'm going to put this on. And close it up. And shake it. And there's your bleach. That's all you need. And now it's ready to go. It's a great bathroom cleaner. Now, it's the peppermint, it can be a little, it's not very overpowering. I only put a couple drops in there. So be careful not to put too much in there or it will be pretty overpowering. But that is how you make your own household bleach. I'm probably going to post another video today, and I'm going to be putting this video in my presentation for Dallas. So I hope you enjoy, and I hope this helps you out. You can get these supplies very easily, and it's very easy to make. That's how you make your own bleach, guys. It's safer than regular bleach. And as a mom of 3, when I was pregnant and going through my nesting stages, I couldn't touch bleach. I couldn't touch a lot of cleaners. So I found a way to make my own, and they're just as effective. And that's how you do it. I hope you enjoyed. And until next time, guys, take care. Bye-bye.
I started researching to make these products at home, and then it turned into lotions and body butters and soaps. You name it, I make it now. We were able to move out of our single wide trailer that was our first home after we got married. We lived there for 4 years. We were pregnant with our son Nathan, our second child, and we were able to move into an apartment. It was slightly bigger, it was more expensive, so we were making enough at the time though, because I was in management. And Then cost of living went up, you know, inflation, and I was, oh, I got a raise, but guess what? Everything else goes up too, so we're right back where we started. So I started praying about it. Lord, what do I do? My husband needs help because he's on disability. He has this bone disease. He can't work. He's working from home, sometimes from the bed because he can't get up and walk. So what do I do? How do I bring in more money? How do I do this? You know, I'm working hard to be promoted again. We have, at this time, two beautiful children. It was April of 2015. It hit me. I'm gonna start my own business, Chemical Free Living, and I'm gonna start making my own products and see what I can do. So the name Neshama Essentials was born in April of 2015. Neshama means breath or spirit of God, and essentials because, well, those are the essentials that you need. And so I started to look up how to make these body butters and lotions. And I, with the research that I was doing, I decided, well, I'm not going to just rip off somebody else. I mean, it's free information. It's out there. Anybody can find it. But I decided to put my own spin off on it. I'm like, so if I just use coconut oil, it melts once it hits 70 degrees. Let me try something else. So I did more research. Oh, I can add beeswax because that will bring it up to 130 degrees. That way it's not going to melt on you. And of course, cornstarch to relieve some of the oiliness that's on your hands. And of course, I use essential oils because it smells good. I'll use vegetable dyes because it's safer for your skin. And I started doing that. My boss at McDonald's was kind enough to let me bring in some of my samples and letting people try it out. And it started taking off very well. And 6 months after I started that, we got this wonderful email from Tom Horn. Came by and I came home. At that time, I had quit my job at McDonald's because even though I was in line to become a department head, the hours were getting to be a little unbearable. Being a mother of two kids and working an overnight, sometimes five overnights in a row, and then I'd have to come home, and after 6 hours of sleep, I'd get up, go work again until sometimes midnight, come home, then have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go do a morning shift. My body was all over the place, and I did horrible things knowing very well exactly what I was doing. I would be sleep deprived, and I would drink an energy drink, then I'd drink a second energy drink, and then a third energy drink to get through the day. Come home, can't sleep because I'm used to being on the midnight shift and drinking all these energy drinks, so I would take synthetic melatonin. Then I'd pass out, get up the next day, feeling groggy, drink a couple more energy drinks because coffee's lost its potency. Nothing's working anymore. And I knew what I was doing with my medical background. I was like, I'm going to die of a stroke, a heart attack, or give myself severe diabetes. So I had to stop working at McDonald's. I didn't care how the salary looked. Once I became a department head, I'm not doing that to myself anymore. I got a job at a bank. And 6 months after that, we received the email, and we were invited to move to Crane, Missouri to work at Skywatch TV. And what a dream that was for my husband. It was so wonderful. I love my job at the bank, but I love my husband so much, and you know, what an opportunity. I couldn't pass that up, and I definitely knew he couldn't pass that up. And he said, what do you think? I said, absolutely, let's do it. This is what you've been working hard for the past 5 years. And with everything that you've been through after self-publishing for so long and working on bed rest for 18 months after a surgery, it came along at the perfect time because that month, we got that email, was the month that he was taken off of bed rest, that he was told that he would be able to find a job. And we got that email at that time. So that's a God thing. So up until recently, for the past 2 years, I've been working side by side with Josh on the show Into the Multiverse. I've been on Chalk Talk a couple times, and then I've been on the main program a couple times. And last summer, I felt the Lord's pushing me to do something different. I felt the Lord saying, I'm not done with you. This is not your final resting place yet. There's more for you to do. Last summer, I started doing a Woman Glorifying God ministry with my friend Sandy, who's here helping watch the children. And we started doing some daily videos or weekly videos, sometimes a couple times a week. And I really felt the Lord pushing me to share deeper, darker parts of my testimony with women who have been abused, women who have been in similar situations that I've been in. Even the miracle of me walking out of a hospital 5 days after my accident when they told me I wouldn't. So I feel that where, you know, God had led me to Skywatch to work alongside my husband, and now he's leading me to do something else. At the end of February, I was able to start working from home. I'm freelance writing, I'm social media marketing, and managing from home, so I can be that mom that's at home when her babies come home from school, which is a wonderful feeling. I'm writing my books, and I'm doing YouTube videos. I had to start a brand new YouTube channel because my other one was demonetized for whatever reason. So I started a brand new one. I need a 1,000 subscribers before I can rename it. Now it's just YouTube/ all these wonderful letters and symbols and whatever until I reach 1,000 subscribers. I'm going to talk to you about some homemade remedies now. I got some great recipes for that. This Vicks Vapor Rub. There's a couple different ways that you can make this. And I, by accident, found out how to do this. One time, after doing an overnight, I woke up from my nap, and I had this terrible feeling in my throat. I knew I couldn't skip a day of work. That's money out of a paycheck. I had on the table where I was working with my concoctions of trying to find different, you know, things that smelled good. I had jojoba oil and spearmint oil, and I just kind of mixed it together. I'm like, I know mint is good, maybe I can breathe. And so I just started putting it all over my neck. And by the end, in a few hours, I started to notice a difference. I was like, oh, you know, I don't feel terrible anymore. And I could actually get through the day. You know, my sinuses cleared up, everything was really good. And so that's a good remedy to make. And if you wanted to make it like how it's thicker, mix it with beeswax. Mix it together, melt it on the stove, and then you would just add it to a mason jar. Glass is really good. You know, stay away from the plastics. But mason jar is really good to just add it there, and then you can just kind of rub it on like lotion. I would do maybe a quarter of a cup of carrier oil, and then 2 to 3 tablespoons of beeswax, and then melt it together and let it cool. Oils like melaleuca, peppermint, or eucalyptus, they work. Anything like thieves oil, it works great as well. Now for coughing, nausea, and pain remedies, we all hear really good things about honey. Honey is a cough suppressant. And peppermint always eases, you know, stomach issues. So if you want to take peppermint, a couple drops of peppermint oil with a carrier oil, you can either put it in a capsule or I add it to my water and I drink it that way. Tablespoon of honey, that will help. Garlic. I know this sounds weird. Garlic is a pain reliever. It's an anti-inflammatory. So when I was pregnant with my son Nathan, I had a horrible abscess tooth. I have dental issues from the car accident. The glass cut at my mouth, and I'm going to need dental work for the rest of my life. I had this terrible abscess tooth when I was pregnant with Nathan. What they gave me was Tylenol 3, and it was not touching it. Pain, like in the head, it always feels worse. It's always magnified. I was playing Words with Friends with my husband, who was sitting right, right in the bed next to me. We were playing Words with Friends with each other, and I'm just crying I'm trying to keep my mind off of this. I'm like, this hurts so bad. And so, my sister happened to be online, and I was texting her or chatting with her and my mom, who was a nurse. And I was like, what do I do? I'm just taking Tylenol 3, and I'm worried this codeine, what it's going to do to the baby. So what they found out, they found if I had garlic, fresh garlic, just heat it up, put it in like a coffee filter, heat it up for a little bit, and just put it where the pain is. Within 5 minutes, that pain was gone. It was gone. And I know a lot of people, garlic, I don't want garlic breath, I'm going to wake up. If you eat parsley, it takes it away immediately. You can brush your teeth a million times, you will never get rid of that smell of garlic, but if you eat parsley before you do, you're going to get rid of it. So that brings me to how you can find out more. I am on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I do it all because I market. I'm marketing my business, doing it full time. So you can find me on Facebook. My name is Christina Peck. You will see my maiden name, Kramer, in parentheses. If you want to email me, you can email me at Neshama, which I'll spell. It's neshamah.essentials@gmail.com. And I do have a website where you can find all of my products. It is very simple. It is christinapeck.com. And there you can find more information and click on the pictures. It will take you to my Amazon handmade site. It will take you to my Etsy shop, and you'll be able to contact me that way as well. I'm on other platforms as well. If anybody is familiar with the newer platform, Steemit, I'm on Steemit at steemit.com@Christina Peck. You can find me there too. So in conclusion, thank you so much for sitting here and listening to this, and I hope you enjoyed it, and hope you got something out of it, and I hope you follow me on Facebook and reach out to me if you have any questions about anything I can help out. And another thing, if you are interested in doing something that I have done, such as starting your own business, do it. Just do it. You're the only one who's standing in the way of you. And that is it. Thank you so much.
All right, we got to wrap it up because I think somebody else needs the room. I'm not sure, but I wanted to pray with you guys real quick before we all leave. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for bringing us together to this amazing conference. And we just pray that you bless Mike and Jeannie. Give them the rest that I'm sure they're so desperately going to need after this weekend. And we just pray that you bless them. I mean, they put together an amazing, amazing thing here. We just pray traveling mercies for everybody who is traveling to go home, and for all the speakers, all the audience members, everybody, Lord. We just thank you for this amazing gathering of people. And I thank you, Lord. I don't always understand your ways. And I know that I'm not meant to, as none of us are, but we know that if we trust you, Lord, and we just follow your direction, even if it seems weird, even if it seems scary, even if we're not sure, if we just follow it, that it's going to end up better in the long run for your purposes and not ours alone, Lord. So we just thank you so much, Father, and we just really pray that the message of servitude goes across the whole church because it is so desperately needed in our day-to-day, Lord, that people, even in their own ministries and everybody has a ministry, Lord, everybody has a ministry, even if they're just talking to their family or friends day-to-day, talking to people at work, that you're the foundation and the next step above that is servitude. Because you came first to serve us, Father. You came first to serve us. The least we can do is serve each other. And just thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.